So I have 3420 to play with for to fulfill two flex watches. Problem is, it's expensive to flex on people. But whatever.
Cole's trying as hard as he can here to give me a heart attack in the middle of this podcast.
He gets it.
He just gets it. Yeah.
He's a draft pro.
All right. So I'm going to...
He does all the sports. Hey everybody, I'm your host Stephen Pulverin, and this is Hodinkee Radio. Back by popular demand, we've got the Hodinkee Radio Fantasy Watch Collection Draft. Last time we did this, if you listened, things went a little bit off the rails. Ben wanted a watch that went to the moon, Cara wanted the Henry Graves Super Complication, it got a little bit crazy. So we brought back three new people. I've got Cole, I've got John, and I've got James. And we decided to put everybody on a budget. So everybody got 10,000 Hodinkee dollars to build a five-watch collection. There are a bunch of usual suspects, and there's also some things that you probably aren't expecting. Each of these collections really reflects the sort of personality of the person drafting. We did squabble over who got to pick a couple different pieces, but it made for some healthy competition. And the best part is you get to vote on who wins. So be sure to check out the show notes or the website or the app and click through to the survey link. You'll be able to vote on who you think should win, which we'll reveal on a future episode where we're going to recap the draft, talk about what we would have done differently, which great watches were left on the table, and of course, who won the draft. So without further ado, here's a mouthful. The 2020 Hodinkee Radio $10,000 watch collection fantasy draft. All right, let's do this. All right, team. Draft round two.
Hey, hey.
You guys ready for this?
All right.
Let's do it.
Y'all ready for this? Oh, great. Come on. That's our musical cue. Are you cutting it in there? All right. You're hitting this in post?
Definitely don't have the rights for that.
Yeah, we super please. Yeah, don't.
You can use what? 3 seconds
yeah,
of
fair,
it?
Yeah, fair use is our episode title.
Just get one horn hit?
Yeah, you guys will get it. All right, so a couple months back, we did our first ever Hodinkee Watch Collection Fantasy Draft. It was a ton of fun. People seemed to really like it. It was also a complete unmitigated disaster. Nobody had any idea what they were doing. I think Gray and I made the mistake of assuming that everyone had played fantasy sports of some kind and that everybody knew the terminology. And also that when we directly asked them on mic, do you understand, that they would be honest about it, which they super duper weren't. So we thought we'd bring the idea back. We're doing it again. This time we're doing it on a budget, though. So I've got Cole here.
Hey.
I got John.
Aloha.
And I got Mr. James Stacey himself.
Hi.
So what we're going to do here is we're going to each draft ourselves a watch collection with a $10,000 budget. To call that budget is you know, we're going to get a lot of flack for that, I'm sure. But in the world of like fine watches and, you know, mechanical watches, fine timepieces, whatever you want to call it, that's a like relatively reasonable amount of money. I think that's an amount of money that like there is at least a critical mass of people who can save up $10,000 over the course of 30, 40 years to spend on building a watch collection slowly. We're not suggesting that everybody run out and go drop 10 grand on their watch collection right now. So with that in mind, we're going to do five watches each. There's four of us here, so it's going to be 20 watches total. So five watches each. You have $10,000. You can spend, you know, you in theory could spend $9,996 on one watch and then a dollar each on the other four. You can spread that out however you want. The only stipulations are your collection has to include one daily wear or beater watch, one dress watch, one complication of some kind, and then you have two flex spots. And I'm going to ask this question again, and I really want everyone to please be honest with me. Does everyone understand what flex means?
Mm-hmm. It's a watch like that's your piece where you flex on people.
Like, no, this is the, you're so wrong.
Like, I feel like a flexible material like plastic.
Yeah, I really feel like Cole is trolling me here. I really hope so. It is not, you're not flexing on anyone. It is short for flexible. It means you can pick whatever you want. There are no guidelines. It's just a spot. You can do whatever the hell with it that you would like.
Why don't we just call it the wild card then?
Why don't... Okay. John Buse is going to redo the rules of
fantasy
here. It has
more of a sports context, right, than the word flex.
But you can.
This is John Buse who auto-drafts and then doesn't field his team in the Office Fantasy
League. All of this is true.
Yeah, it's very true. You still almost beat me week one last year, which was kind of embarrassing. All right. So those are our rules. We're going to draft in a serpentine-style draft, which is pretty common. So you go... First pick, second pick, third pick, fourth pick, and then the fourth pick picks again. So you then go 4-3-2-1. It keeps it from being super unfair for the person who gets first pick and fourth pick. So it works like a snake, hence the name Serpentine. Does everybody understands that? Yeah. All right, we got the rattlesnake over here. All right. I like that energy, Cole. This draft can include modern watches, vintage watches, pre-owned watches, like, you know, kind of basically anything that's available on the open market. The only stipulation is if it's currently available for sale, the budget counts against the retail price. You can't buy everything gray market or aftermarket. You have to actually pay retail price for stuff. Sorry, guys.
Sorry, Joma Shop.
Yeah, sorry, guys. Yeah, no Joma Shop shopping over here. Shout out Joma Shop. So... That's one thing. And the other thing is you can't pick, like we did with the last draft, you can't pick the same watch as somebody else, but the same watch, quote unquote, has a pretty broad definition. So like if John picks a, let's say, 5512 Submariner, somebody can't pick the modern ceramic Submariner. Like a Submariner is a Submariner, an Explorer is an Explorer, a GMT is a GMT, a Black Bay is a Black Bay, all that stuff. Overseas is overseas, all these things. If you're getting an overseas for under $10,000, you're probably doing something super wrong. But
Or right.
One of the two. All right. So just as a reminder, you have categories to fill here. They are a daily watch, like a beater watch, something you can really wear every day, something that can take a beating. Like it has to be something durable. Second category is a dress watch. It needs to be something you can wear with a suit or a tux, maybe. You know a dress watch when you see a dress watch. The third one is a complication. It has to do something more than tell the time and the date. A date, we're not counting as a complication here. So it has to, hours, minutes, seconds, and date do not count. It has to do something more than that. Mm-hmm. And then the other two spots are your flex spots. They can be literally anything you want as long as they are watches of some kind. They count. All right. Without further ado, let's do this thing. Up first, Mr. John Buse. You're on the clock.
All right. For my first pick, John Buse will take the Tudor Black Bay 58 on a bracelet for $3,700.
It's a solid pick.
That's a real solid pick. Yeah. Honestly, I'm not at all shocked that BB58 goes first overall.
Do we also all have to talk in third person when we do this, though?
No, you okay. Super don't. Right. But
just
that's okay.
Just sure that wasn't a rule.
why'd you go Black Bay 58, John?
I went Black Bay 58 because it's a watch that I love. It's a watch that I actually own one and I wear it quite a bit. And I know that it's just from my own experience that it's a fantastic daily wear. Quite frankly, I wanted to take advantage of the fact that I had the first pick and I knew that it probably wouldn't last longer than a round or two.
I think that's a pretty safe bet. I had BB58 on my short list. It wasn't going to necessarily be one of my top choices, but it was like probably number two for that category if my first pick got taken.
Yeah, I'm confident, you know, because my list has, like, that's probably the biggest name on there, and then I have some more esoteric stuff. So I wanted to clear that one before I start going to the stuff that you guys might not be picking.
Do you have this on your list, Cole?
Yeah, on like the short list too.
All
of us. James?
No. Oh, James right. Shaking his head
it's
there.
Not even on my complicated piece of paper.
Oh, amazing. I think also James might be the only person of the four of us who doesn't own a BB58, right?
That's true.
I do not.
Oh, man. All right.
Missing out.
I think that's a pretty solid start here. I don't think anybody can argue yet.
That's a first round pick, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed.
Falls in nicely.
All right, James, you're on the clock. Pick
this,
number two.
This is a really tough one because I do get pick two. I can take anything I want.
Except the Black Bay 58.
I didn't want the 58, so that works out fine. I'm having a real tough time kind of planning out the dream team here.
I love all your sports talk.
But yeah. I think I got to go with what I think would be the MVP for like a many decade long relationship with a watch, and that would be a 14 270 Explorer.
You are my least favorite person on the team right now.
So that's the 30, so the essentially the final generation of the 36 millimeter Explorers. There's huge value still on the table there. I've been offered these as far as, so I have to establish pricing because it's a secondhand watch. I've been offered these face-to-face for as little as $3,000 on a bracelet. I don't think that's a realistic price for a normal person walking off the street into a store, but I do think if you're planning to wear it every day and it be your daily wear, not a museum piece, that $4,000 is still a fair price for these. You may not get your say on what the bracelet is at that price point, but you're not buying one that like needs a full service or is missing a crown or something like that.
I had them priced a little higher than that because that was honestly going to be my pick up next.
What would you price it at?
I had them priced like between 5 and 5.5.
Ooh.
Okay.
But I think you can find them at 4 probably.
I think if you...
I was going by like, you boxes, can pull papers, up a web browser.
You can find them for 5.
Yeah.
They're just better.
Okay.
But I can go with 5 if that's if the group's more comfortable with than 4.
That's fine.
I have like a $400 wiggle room in there, so it would change the whole team. But
$400.
Obviously, I'm.
What did we land on for happiness of pricing there?
Let's go.
We'll call it $4,500.
Let's give this one to Gray. Gray, you're our intrepid producer here. What are you calling this one at?
I'm buying the guy. He said he had $400 of flexibility. We'll go 4-4.
All right. There we go.
We're flat at 10 now. If I get the other picks.
Perfect. I think that's an unimpeachable pick. That watch actually kind of like fucked up my whole process here when I was building my little collection, because I kept having the problem where I said like, okay, if I have $10,000 to spend and I own a 36 millimeter Explorer that I can wear to the beach, do I need anything else?
You're going to go buy some architecture stuff.
Yeah, right. Like I'm going to go buy a camera or like a plane ticket, you know? Like at that point, I start to have a problem with like what else. If you give me that watch on a bracelet and like 3 or 4 really nice straps, like a NATO, maybe something like super refined and thin, like one of our calfskin straps or something, and then maybe one of those like side stitched vintage style straps, like I'm going to be hard pressed to find a watch that even if I put a suit on, I'm not just going to throw a leather strap on that and want to wear that instead. Mm. And to me, like the whole exercise here was like, I wanted to build a collection that was like an actual collection where I'd like each piece and each piece would have a place in my life.
For sure.
And that watch actually in this exercise kind of like screwed me up there because I had a hard time picking watches that could compete with that watch.
Yeah. I mean, a 36 millimeter Explorer is kind of like a sports watch that's also a dress watch.
I mean, the current gen is an amazing watch at 39 millimeters and at a price point not much more than what we've established a 14-270 should cost you. But I mean, this is like there were basically two pretty strong contenders for whatever my first pick would be, and I didn't know I would necessarily get to pick second and essentially have free reign. But I do like this one more than what would have been the other possible option, especially basically just because of sizing.
Have you worn one? You did a week on the wrist with the most modern iteration. Yep.
Yeah, and I've spent some time with 14-270 when we were down, actually almost exactly this time last year, we were in Miami for Watches and Wonders, and I went and shot like a real modem burner at Matt Bain's spot with all the stuff, and he had like a tray of, you know, like the last gen, the thinner case 40 millimeter Rolex stuff, and in that he had two 14-270s. And both in really nice condition. One was on a Jubilee, and I definitely should have just bought it.
What I'm interested in hearing is, so you do own the Polar Explorer.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you not pick that?
They're too expensive.
Okay.
There's no foot like that watch. If an absolute fair price on one, like if mine got stolen or lost today and I went out to replace it, to get one with a 3186 with some idea of where it was purchased and who owned it is $7,000 to $8,000 now.
Yeah, you're blowing your budget.
And that's more than double what I paid.
Right.
When I got that watch. So it's just a kind of a problematic space when you're talking about $10,000. At 15, it's no question. It's still my favorite modern Rolex. But I would give up the GMT hand and get a lot of general usefulness out of a 14-270.
Mm. Fair.
I think that's solid. All right. I'm going to go now. I have a couple different routes I could go, but I'm gonna kind of hard pivot away from. I had two collections built here, and it was basically predicated on whether I got the Explorer or not. I'm gonna go the other tack. And the funny thing is I had two possible beater watches on that list. One of them was the BB58. So I'm going with the other one. And I'm kind of cheating both of you here. I'm going to split the difference and I'm going to go with the BB36.
Right. Well, you said if a sub is a sub, then a Black Bay is a Black Bay.
I disagree.
You remember? No, I think the BB58 and the BB36 are substantively different.
Watches. I agree with
the BB36 you. BB36 has more in common with an Explorer than with a...
Yeah. Right, but you are the rule...
You are correct. The letter of the law would, as I said it less than 10 minutes ago, is that I can't do this, but...
I think when you use that example, though, you were saying like if someone picks a 58, that you can't also say pick a 41, which is ostensibly the same.
Cole's letting me slide here.
Of course.
Well done.
BB36 is a good choice.
Yeah, I'm going to go BB36 mostly because it is the closest thing you can buy today to a 36 millimeter Explorer. And if James has that, I'm going to go with the BB36.
I would have done the same if this had been reversed, if I hadn't gotten the 14-270. It was the Tudor on my list, certainly.
I'm going to take that as a ringing endorsement. If you were going to make the same move,
such a cool watch.
That's a good pick.
And huge value for its price point.
Yeah, it's also $29.50 on the bracelet. Like the fact that that's under $3,000,
room to maneuver. Sure. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And I kind of had the same problem James did, which is with, you know, once you start getting into a lot of the sport Rolex stuff, most of it is over $5,000, and you start when you're trying to build five watches here, you have no wiggle room, and you really get into the problem of like, you know, three watches on your list are kind of like just there because you have to have them, and they're not things you would actually want or would wear. Mm. I would go BB36 on a bracelet. I think it's such a cool watch. Every time I see one, I love it. I've come extremely close to buying them many, many times. I own an old 36 millimeter Explorer from the 60s. It's definitely a slightly more delicate watch. And I've often thought about having a BB36 as like the companion that I can beat up. But I'm glad I skated by here just barely under the wire. My other two first picks were both taken. So Cole, on the clock. Let's go. Last pick of the first round.
Last pick of the first round, I will go category dress watch.
Okay.
And
shaking things up.
Yeah, just shaking it up a little bit because this one should go very quickly in dress. And it could also be considered sport too. It depends on what kind of person you are. But remember, the man makes the watch, not the other way around, you know?
Getting lessons.
So I'm going to say Polrouter. Universal Genève Polrouter for $1,200 is what I put mine at. Ooh. That is because that's going to get you a good one. That'll get you a good pull router.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if you want like black dial, no date, stainless steel, that's going to be 15 to 18.
Okay.
But pretty much any of the date models, any of the non-stainless steel models, rose gold is cheaper. And to be honest, I don't mind one. This is a watch from the late 50s up to the late 60s, right? So they're not going to be in perfect condition, most of them. And I'd be fine with a $1,200 one. I'm going to say that's where I'm going to put it on the range.
Okay. I'll take that. That's a solid choice.
That's going to be my dress watch. And I think the reason I chose dress first is because the watches in the other categories, you're not going to pick anyway. So it's not like there's no competition here. And the pull router, John, I see you looking at my list. No. I see you looking at my list, John.
Well, guard your list.
Yeah, I think the Polrouter is a perfect dress watch for someone who typically likes sports watches.
Yeah.
And I personally am tied to it because why I like it is the aviation history associated with it. Like most dress watches, to me, and I know this isn't technically true, but to me, I just simply don't know the genesis of a lot of dress watches. I don't know the history, but the Polrouter history captivates me.
Solid choice. First vintage watch I ever bought was a Polrouter.
You got married in one from
I got married wearing my Polrouter. I'm a big fan. I actually like the date window on that watch.
Do you? I don't.
I do. It's asymmetrical. It's super weird. I like it because it's weird. But yeah.
Well, for $1,200, I would have to go date, to be honest.
Yeah, you would.
Was this watch on anyone else's list, by the way?
It was in my reserve.
Okay.
It was not on my like top choices, but it was in the, if we get down to the fourth or fifth round and I'm tight on cash, it was an option.
All right. So Serpentine Order.
Serpentine Draft means.
I'll go again.
You go again.
With $8,800 left in your war chest.
Ooh, that's plenty of money to mess with, you know? Okay. In this case, I will pick my Complication Watch next. And that is going to be a watch that I do own. So it's reflective of real life because I'm kind of in the camp of having 10 grand to play with a collection, right? It's not far off from reality. So I'm going to go ahead and pick a Omega Flightmaster. This is a vintage watch, so I will, you know, balance that with some modern stuff later. But the Flightmaster, again, aviation connection, awesome. But I think that the Flightmaster is just one of the coolest watches ever made to me. And I know that's not a popular opinion, but I would go with the Caliber 910. You can probably get away with that for $3,500. Maybe you'll have to go 9/11 though, and the difference is the AMPM indicator versus running seconds, of course. But yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. So a pole router and a Flightmaster. So there's a little bit of a pattern emerging here.
And but what's your budget on the Flightmaster?
$3,500. And so all right,
I think Flightmaster prices are a little stronger than that. Depends. I don't think you're getting a Flightmaster under $4,000.
All right, if you want to put it at four, sure.
I think we got to go four is the base for a Flightmaster.
I think four for a 910. For a 911, the running seconds, the less desirable one, although it is more, it's technically superior, is higher water resistance. It was used in the Roscosmos space program. 911 is really more interesting in many regards, but it's less expensive.
Okay.
But I'll give you four.
All right, we can go a little lower if you want.
No, let's go four, Steven. All no
right.
problem.
All right.
No problem. So that puts me at $4,000 for that, and then $1,200 for a pole router, $5,200 for those
two watches. All right, you're over half your budget after two picks.
That's okay.
All right, you feel good about that?
I do, yeah. Oh, and I also own both these. I sold my pole router, but...
Living the dream.
Yeah, yeah, I have owned both these. So anyway, that's my pick.
I think that's a very you pick. I'm honestly, I kind of had a funny feeling you were going to pick a Flightmaster as part of this.
Really?
Yeah, it just feels, I mean, I know you own that watch. I know you like that watch. It's a watch that kind of fits. Like, I had a funny feeling.
And it's a watch I doubt anyone else is picking anyway.
James is biting his bottom lip. I think maybe
there's
James
no way
is
in hell
this.
You were going to pick a Flightmaster.
No, I'm not even paying. I'm doing math over here.
James is mad at math, not at Cole.
I'm the $400 wiggle on the 14270. Cosmia would have been a sweet team that would have come within about $50 of the limit. So
no, sorry.
Yeah,
dude.
You might be able to give it to him. Are one of those watches
we'll
secondary
give you 50
market?
Bucks.
We'll see.
Okay. I'll give you $50.
No, it's not 50 anymore. It would have been.
So who's up next?
I am up next. I am going to go... What am I going to go with here? You know what? I'm going to go with a watch that... I'm not going to go with my next most expensive watch because I think that's still going to be around by the time we get back here. If not, I'm kind of up Schitt's Creek. But yeah, I'm going to go here with one of my flex spots, and I'm going to go with a Grand Seiko 56 GS. I'm going to stick with the theme here of watches that I own or close to watches I own. When we were working on launching Hodinkee.jp, last year, I went over to Tokyo for the first time. I've always wanted to go to Japan. There have been a couple times where I've come really close to going and trips have fallen through and whatever. So it was a really important, meaningful thing for me. And to work with our team over there was awesome, continues to be awesome. So I wanted to commemorate it with a watch. I've wanted a Grand Seiko for a long time. And I actually ended up, there were some other American collectors there at the same time. Shout out to JP and Eric. And we ended up going watch shopping together in Ginza. And they showed me this little like basement watch store down an alleyway in Ginza. And I was able to buy a really beautiful 56 GS there. It's a watch, I mean, I featured it on my watch I wore most. I just think it's incredible value. And it's a watch I never fully appreciated till I owned one. I've seen vintage Grand Seikos a lot. I've seen tons of modern Grand Seikos. But until I really lived with it and would just like have it catch my eye, like as I was not paying attention to it, I didn't fully understand why wearing watches with that sort of case design and polishing and finishing was so different. And now I get it. So I kind of can't imagine my own collection without one of these, and they have the added benefit of being quite affordable. So it's a great thing for an exercise like this. So I think for a nice 56GS with a date in steel, nice unpolished example, I think around $1,500 is pretty fair. You know, I paid a little less for mine, but mine was in Japan where supply is a little more plentiful. You'll see them in the US around 2,000 sometimes. So I kind of split the difference there.
So it was 1,000 is split the difference though. Like how much are they in Japan though?
In Japan, you're looking at $1,000 to $1,200 for a nice example. In the US, you might find them as high as $2,000. Yeah. Over $2,000, you're starting to get into like rare variants and things like that. But a simple white dial steel case, you should definitely be able to find under $2,000. I think closer to $1,500 is where you want to be. So that's my pick.
Cool. Good pick.
Solid pick for sure.
Yeah.
All right. James, what are you doing next?
All right. This is a tough one.
56 still on the board.
56 still on the board. I'm going to go with the dress watch next, as I think this is one that might be on some other people's list that they might be wanting to sneak in towards the end to keep their pricing down. And this is, in my opinion, the de facto dress watch. If you're only going to wear the watch a couple times a year, you might not even have to worry about getting it serviced. It's an older vintage watch. And this would be an Omega Seamaster DeVille.
Yeah.
It's a great choice.
I think a really fair price would be $700. If you guys are, I've seen them like if we're talking eBay examples, $400, $450, $500.
I had it down for $500.
Yeah, there you go. So I wrote $7 to give a buffer. I tried to put a buffer on a lot of these. I think if you want a pie pan, if you want something a little bit flashier, you know, same brand, this is an amazing brand to be able to wear. They also like, there's something resplendent about these watches. They kind of predate. They kind of predate like the little overlap that started to happen between dress watches and sport watches. They still wear just like dress watches, despite being, you know, saying Seamaster on the dial. And I think that paired with a really nice strap, so we could bump up to the better part of $700 there if that makes people more comfortable. But a Seamaster of some sort with a great strap, I would pay extra to find one in gold of some sort. I don't know what that would do to the pricing. What you see online is more in the $500 to $800 range for a really clean example where you're not worried about the movement and you could just kind of wear it. You know, in my case, I'd maybe wear that. I'd either start to wear it a lot, like jeans, t-shirt, and a dress watch on a nice strap, or I would wear it 4 to 5 times a year, something like that, when I throw on a suit.
Good pick.
So yeah, if we're pick. Good, we want to call it $500 or $700, Gray.
$700 buys you a whole lot of goodwill towards the end. Once we're
right. $700 it is.
Yeah, let's go $700. I think that's a great choice. I mean, I would have been shocked if we got through this and nobody said vintage Seamaster. Yeah. You can find like, I agree with James, you know, $700 for a nice example found on eBay or something like that. You can buy like a nice example through like a storefront retailer still for under $1,000.
Yeah. 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 And I think the goal with these things and those movements is buy one that's already ready to go. Mm. Yeah, don't buy the one that then needs you to find the right crown and you have to then become an advanced member on the Omega forums to get access to that drawer of crowns that exists somewhere, et cetera. Buy the sorted one and just wear it and enjoy it. Maybe get it engraved. Yeah. Buy it for a birthday or something like that.
That's the best value so far.
Yeah, they're inexpensive enough that they should be like fun and turnkey, I think.
You know? Super fun. Yeah.
Don't turn it into a project.
They're beautiful as well. And there's a bunch of different styles. I mean, like for me, it would be the Seamaster DeVille, but then there's a lot of wiggle room even within Seamasters.
I'm going to totally mess up your budget here, but I would say pay a little more and get one on a Beats or Rice bracelet if you can. Some of them come on those really beautiful bracelets, but then it's steel. It's not gold. I see what you're doing here, but if you decide to go steel,
I'm not that much of a bracelet guy.
Okay, so that's fair.
I like a dress watch on leather, and I couldn't, you know, I don't have the, well, I just barely had the cash to wiggle my way and do, I almost did another great watch. not going to get me that easy.
All right, perfect. All right, John, you're on the clock. End of round two.
All right, and so now I get two in a row, right?
Because you do get two in a row. You get
corner.
Okay.
Last pick of round two and the first pick of round three.
Sweet. Okay. 300 still on the board. So we'll do my dress watch first. I'm going to pick, staying in the theme of picking watches that I already own, I'm going to do a gold IWC Caliber 89 as my dress watch. To me, this is a watch that I've owned since 2012 that I still wear. That is probably my best dress watch. I have a Seiko that I wear often as a dress watch as well, but it's not a true dress watch. It's a bit sporty. It's got the GMT. So I'm gonna say my IWC Caliber 89 in 4N pink gold. In 2012, I paid $2,100 for it. I would expect to pay more for it now. I'll say $2,750.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. Like a fair price totally for one of those.
Yeah,
it's a lot of watch for that money.
Yeah,
right. It's a rad watch. I remember when you bought that watch.
It's a dope watch, right?
It's such a good watch.
2012.
It has like fancy lugs.
Oh, it does. Yeah, it's got those shark fin lugs. It's nice.
Yeah,
yeah.
I remember you were like, "Does this look good? Like, this price seems almost too good for this. Like, is this watch okay?"
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of us looked at it, and yeah, it's a killer watch.
Yeah, no, I still love that watch.
You guys have known each other for a long time now.
Yeah,
2012. Yeah. You bought that. Wow, that's something.
Yeah, so that's my dress watch pick. In terms of a complication, maybe I don't think I'm taking anything off the board that you guys would have gone for, but maybe I'm going to go with a steel Minerva chronograph with a 1320.
Damn, John.
chronograph. That's a great hand. You know, great hand wound chronograph movement. I remember when Jack did a survey of great vintage chronograph movements, this Minerva 1320 was included in the list in the magazine. It's you know, a movement that still exists as a modern day Montblanc caliber coming out of Villeray in their higher end chronographs. I think it's the 1321 as a modern movement. Might have to fact check that, but I'm reasonably sure that it's still in production and it's called that. I think a good steel example online can be had for about $3,000.
Yeah, I think that's a fair price. I mean, they vary kind of wildly, especially when you start getting into, like, a lot of them have retouched dials. The military ones can be a little bit more because they're these, like, super cool black dials and luminous hands. But if you go with just, like, steel, white dial, non-luminous, or, like, just a little bit of lume in the hour and minute hands, yeah, you should be able to get one for that budget. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of movement.
Yeah.
And it's also, those watches wear like vintage watches because they're super thin and they're like 33 to 35 millimeters. Like, they're pretty tiny.
Yeah.
Especially for a chronograph. It's kind of like a real watch nerd choice, I would say. All right, James, coming right back my way.
Looping back around, I think we're going to do another Omega.
Mm.
Another Seamaster.
Oh no, boy. I think I know the one already.
But this is my complication, and it is the 2234 Seamaster Pro.
2234 is the...
So it's a sword hand, wave dialed GMT.
Yeah, I know it.
So that's with a modified ETA movement, so that's Omega's work in modifying, and not quite off the shelf, but an ETA-based caliber for local jumping hours. So you get the same action that you would get on other watches, which I shouldn't list because we're in a draft. And... I really love these. I owned a 2254.
Mm.
Why am I listing watches? I really love these, but this hits both the complication. And while I do love, of course, a white dialed Rolex, I would go with the black dial here, not the great white.
Interesting. Yeah.
Simply because if you've had both of them in person, the black feels perfect and the white feels real strange.
Is that,
not bad, really? Strange, but strange.
I think I'm drawn to the white. I love that watch. Go. I think this is a great pick.
Yeah,
I would go white though. But
and this one, I think an absolutely fair price. And I did quite a bit of research to make sure that, because I've seen these, the spread is high. If they haven't been cared for, they don't have the bracelet, etc. I've seen these like in the $2,000 range, which is a ton of watch for that. But you have to find someone who could service it, etc. In a better case, they jump up, but not a ton. I think this is a $2,500 watch, the way I would buy it and wear it. It wouldn't
great
be
pick. Great pick.
This wouldn't be a museum quality example, but you know, better than the last 2254 I owned.
Interesting. I think this is one of those watches that like is going to continue to age well too. Like, I think as we look back over the last, you know, like 20, 30 years of watches, this is one that people are going to say like kind of like helped set a course for Omega. Cause if we look at this basic archetype, like, this is still a super important part of Omega's core collection. And one that I think is just continuing to get better. Like, the new models for this year, the one with the white dial, they now obviously have coaxial movements in them. They have, you know, really, really fantastic.
The big difference for me is the sword hands.
Yeah. They don't do sword hands anymore.
Right.
Which,
so I miss the sword hands a lot. Like I said, I've had one in the past, and I think that they feel so different than the competition, so different than the other brands that you'd expect them. But there's something about the skeleton hands that like has never spoken to me, the Bond style hands. And there's something I really dig about that whole generation. They're really thin. I don't actually know the thickness on the GMT, but assuming it's on the same base 1120, it actually probably isn't any thicker to make that possible, or at least not much. But I mean, the 2254 is 11 millimeters for a 300 meter diver.
Yeah, these are great. This is like a watch that I think is going to pop later on. They're going to be more expensive.
Yeah, it's a rad.
But still, I think this still has a wave dial.
It does.
Yep. Yeah, which is super, super cool.
And like really good lume, even for a watch that's going to be
it's a great watch.
Bit on the older side. And of the fact that
it has the sword hands, which is a throwback to the Royal Navy Mil.
Like the original SM 300.
So. Yeah, exactly. This is the only modern watch that references that.
Aside from their
sword hands. If you're finding it in something, I think this is might be the best pick so far. No.
Interesting. No, that's a hot take.
I mean, more like this is a watch that like people tend to forget about that is a really good value and just a great watch. But no one really thinks about this watch much. Like it didn't. I didn't think about it until you said it. Yep. Then when you said it,
41 millimeters steel, aluminum bezel.
Yeah,
it'll age nicely. Really simple. Can be. I mean, it's at a base that can be serviced fairly simply. That's not going to cost you a fortune. They run really well. And again, for me, it's one. It hits my complication, and two, it's directly modified for jumping hour, local hour, which is the proper way to do a GMT.
They didn't really make it for that long. So, like in a few years, when people go looking for them. There aren't that many of them, even though they're
I'm not sure. I mean, you can always see them pop up.
You but do now.
It's not as highly, as some others.
Right.
All right. Cool. I'm up next. You know, I'm going to go for my dress watch, and I'm probably going to piss a lot of people off here. So come at me in the comments. Go for it. I'm going to pick a quartz watch. Also one that I own. I'm going to go with the Cartier Santos Dumont.
That's a good pick.
And I'm going to go in the smaller size. So I think you should buy a tiny steel quartz watch as your dress watch. A tiny modern steel quartz watch as your dress watch. Cartier is so good at what they do. And like, if this were a $100,000 budget, there would still be a Cartier as my dress watch. It would just be platinum and super rare and hand wound, probably from the 50s. Maybe the 40s, but I think, you know, it's $3,650 in steel for the smaller model. If you really want to go for the larger model, it's $3,900. So it's what is that? $250 more. I don't know. I think it's two hands, so you don't see a second hand tick, which is something that I know drives a lot of people crazy, myself included. But it's so much watch for the money, and it's so beautiful. And you put it on, you just feel like $1 million. I got mine toward the, I guess, middle of last year. And I went to my cousin's black tie wedding, and like putting that watch on with a tuxedo, you feel awesome. That is about as good as it gets. And you know, I wore it just the other night, put on a, you know, jacket and tie and went to dinner, and it's just like, it instantly makes you feel just like keyed in. I think it's beautiful. And I really think, despite the fact that I'm sure some purists still get on me for spending over a third of the budget for this exercise on a quartz watch. I think in terms of the enjoyment you would get out of it, I think it's totally there.
Yeah.
And no one will even know it's quartz because there's no seconds.
Exactly.
So nobody knows. You're all good.
And I have never once, I've owned it, I guess almost a year now. I've never once looked at it and been like, oh, I wish this was mechanical. Like, not once. It has never occurred to me when I look at that watch that I wish it was mechanical. I guess in the abstract, I guess I wish I do, but like, it doesn't impact my enjoyment of it one bit.
Yeah.
Solid pick.
Cool. We're rounding the corner again here.
Yeah. Do I pick twice again?
Yeah, you pick end of round three, beginning of round four.
Okay. So for my pick, I've gone two vintage already. And also, my backup for the Polerotter, though, is actually a Lange pocket watch, which looking, because I thought that qualifies. What is more dressy and more schnazzy than going to the theater on a Friday night with a pocket watch, a Lange pocket watch at that, right?
I love this move from you, Cole. This is a total wild card move, so, and I love it.
And well,
I am there for it.
The reason I mentioned that is looking back, I should have done that. I blew, or I have decent money to play with right now, and I could have actually gone with that, but I'll be happy with the Polaroid. It's fine. All right. So next, so what I've done is the dress and the complication. My beater watch, I will pick next. And I think this one is going to be the Sin 556.
Cool choice.
Killer watch.
And it, like, you can get away with a Seiko Turtle, which is what I did in real life. But since I have a little coin to throw around here, I'm going to go with, yeah, the Sin 556, that used to be under $1,000. Now, if you go to the only U.S. retailer, it's $1,380, unfortunately. It's a pretty steep jump, but that's what it is. And that's on the bracelet. But
good choice.
I'd like to buy it on the bracelet, but realistically, I'd probably wear it on a NATO most of the time, or a Zulu, not actually NATO. I hate two pieces of fabric under the wrist. I like one. Just pass through.
All right, we're having you back on the show. We'll talk. We'll do the NATO Zulu battle between you and James at some point.
I cut all the underpieces off.
Oh, guys,
you cut them off. So like you're just underpass? You're making a Zulu.
Yeah, but what if you lose a pin? You're going to lose your watch then, right?
That's fine.
No, that's not the way that would work.
Really?
There's
yeah,
like
that's true. Yeah, yeah. You Zulu, even if you lose one pin, it'll still hang.
The second
off.
One just gives you so if you take the watch off and if there's a lot of gap between the spring bars, it would keep the watch from sliding down like the ribbon.
Uh-huh.
That's all the second underkeeper does.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I
removed that on my NATOs.
Or so it's I would
one
go
piece of one piece of fabric.
Two piece nylon.
Yeah,
like
for sure.
Like military style, you know. Two piece nylon strap.
Yeah.
I don't even know what they call that, but you know the strap.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean.
It's like a traditional leather band, which is nylon.
I got you.
And I would probably do it in khaki or drab, sure. And I would just enjoy the 556 because legibility is there. There is a tegumented version of this, but it's a little bit too rich for my blood at this point.
What does tegumented mean? Can you explain that to people?
That is Sin's proprietary hardened steel, which is used on Unterwasserboots. The German U-boats.
Unterwasserboot?
Yeah, underwater okay. boat, you know?
All right.
And I think that's what it means. But yeah, it's like, it's submarine steel, they call all right. it. So that's what, and that adds a little bit to the price. But realistically, standard 316L will be fine for me as my beater. So that's that.
All right. So let's do a little bit of a recap before we go into round four, which Cole, you'll get to start. Let's start with John, since you picked first. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a quick rundown of your collection? Just give us the watch, how much it costs, and then at the end, give us how much money you have left to spend.
So my first watch I picked was my everyday watch. I picked the Tudor Black Bay 58. Getting it on the bracelet, of course, that'll cost me $3,700. My dress watch, I went with a vintage pick, a watch that I actually own, the IWC Caliber 89 in gold with fancy lugs. Figuring I can pick one up for $2,750. And my complication is going to be a vintage Minerva chronograph hand-wound with their caliber 1320. And I figured I could pick one of those up in steel for $3,000. That leaves me with, by my math, $550 left.
All right, two more picks, $550.
And for mine, I get the Rolex Explorer 14270, I said $4,400, an Omega Seamaster DeVille, we said $700, and then an Omega Seamaster 2234 Pro, which about $2,500, and I believe that leaves me with $2,400.
All right, so for mine, I went with the Tudor Black Bay 36 for $2,950 as my sport watch. I went with the Cartier Santos Dumont for $3,650 for my dress watch. And as one of my flex picks, I've got a vintage Grand Seiko 56GS, which I estimated around $1,500 for a quality example. So I have $1,900 left to spend on the last two rounds. Cole?
I opened with Polaroid as my dress watch. Then for my complication, I went with Flightmaster. That could be AMP indicator or a chronograph, whatever, you know. Plenty of complications there. And then for my beater, I went with the Sin 556. And according to my calculations, those totaled up equals $6,180. So I have 3420 to play with to fulfill two flex watches. Problem is, it's expensive to flex on people, but whatever.
Cole's trying as hard as he can here to give me a heart attack in the middle of this podcast.
He gets it.
He just gets it. Yeah.
He's a draft pro.
All right. So I'm going to.
He does all the sports.
Yeah. I'm a total. Hey, football, basketball, baseball,
even hockey, golf.
Know, we like sports. We don't care who knows. So basically,
are we the only two that know what that is?
What the hell are you guys talking about?
Early Lonely Island.
Oh yeah, very early.
Oh.
So right now, my next objective here is
hockey, football, golf.
Pass me the pigskin.
Yeah. No. Throw me the rock. It's just Cole and I. All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
All right. Boom goes the dynamite. Us. Yeah. Are we starting?
It's a great skit.
The new Hodinkee sports cast. Just the two of you guys talking about sports all day.
I would not be qualified for this position.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna pick my watch here.
I could fake it.
I'm picking one flex watch. I need to have a Seiko in the collection. Just has to. It's kind of has to happen. So I'm going to go A, because I see prices are like getting a little out of hand on these guys, and B, I just love them. And I also have owned one too, but a Willard, Captain Willard, Seiko 6105, asymmetrical case. I love the watch.
Great choice.
Yeah. Everyone likes the watch. There's not really too much to talk about it. It's a great watch. And
what do you like about it?
What do I like about it?
Yeah. It's a watch that everybody kind of like accepts as awesome, but I want to know what you like about it.
So here's what I like about it. Back in the day, when everyone on Watch You Seek was hot on Samurai, Monster, the vintage Seiko that no one paid attention to was the 6105. People were literally buying them and bastardizing the hell out of them and, just tearing them up. And back then, I loved that watch, but I didn't quite... I was listening to what the community liked, and that was like new Seikos and so forth. And I had a thing for that asymmetrical case. Then later on in life, learned about the Vietnam War connection, so forth. And all right, so that happened. Then I go do that talking watches with David Williams. He has one. Obviously, there's something about this watch that is alluring, right? And I like the asymmetrical. I like weird, like the Grand Seiko SBG K005, my favorite Grand Seiko. Weird case.
Yeah.
The Willard, kind of a weird case. Yeah, it's a visually distinct watch. I mean, it looks great.
Awesome.
And it's very of its time. And yeah, so the other thing too is they were cheap. Now those things, they're creeping up.
So what are you thinking you pay for this one?
I have down $1,200. And I think that is fair, because that's how much I paid for one kind of recently. And I bought mine from a local New York guy, and it was in great nick and so forth. They can go as high. If you want a perfect one, it's about two. But here's the thing. This is not a watch that you buy in perfect condition. And if it is in perfect condition, then it hasn't lived a good life. And these aren't watches that, these are watches where the story is in the metal,
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you want a perfect one, sure, $2,000. But I'm not a perfect guy. I don't want perfect watches.
All right. I'll go with that. That's fine.
Solid pick.
Cool. I'm going to pick my complication. And just cuz I'm in with my last pick in mind, I'm poking the bear here proverbially. For my complication, I am picking an Apple Watch Series 5 edition in titanium on a sport band. It is a cool $799, and it is the most complicated watch you can buy for $799, I think. Here's my feeling. If I'm trying to build a collection for $10,000, I kind of want to save some of my coin. And not that you can't get an awesome mechanical watch for $799, but to start getting something complicated, I'm not really a complications guy. Two, I actually use my Apple Watch all the time, and I find it immensely useful. And in the spirit of keeping to only five watches total, I felt like I had to keep my Apple Watch in there. So,
D- did you put that in round four rather than five because you thought John would grab it?
I did. Yeah. I thought he was going to steal it. Yeah. No, I put it there because I wanted to put it next to the Cartier. So if, while I'm poking at people, I can.
If you're buying an Apple Watch, I'm using my remaining $2,000 to buy a nice stainless steel refrigerator or some other appliance. Oh, you know?
Okay. Cole's buying a fridge. Okay. That's cool. That's cool. This is going to be a vote. Remember? People are going to vote to see who wins.
That's
so,
true.
Pick a good fridge.
And they're
you better
actually,
pick a good fridge.
And the thing is, I think the Apple Watch outsold the entire Swiss watch industry. So that means that a lot of people like Apple Watches. So I do apologize to you folks who are buying
that. It did.
And don't let that come into play when you vote for me. You know?
Cole's now apologizing to the listeners. That means we've reached a good stage in this draft.
Okay.
Sweet, James.
Fourth pick. Now we're starting to loop back into watches I actually own, and there's no way I have a collection, whether it's three watches or two watches, without a Halios. Mm. So for me, it's a Seaforth, but to be fair, you can't buy a Seaforth right now. That said, the next two models they're coming out with, the Fairwind and the Universa, are both going to be in the same price point, and I would love either of those. I'm not that picky. You're looking at $700. That's your retail cost for one of these. I've owned maybe all but two of the watches that they've ever made. The stuff that was really big, the Puck was, you know, 47.5 millimeters. But when they landed, when Jason landed on the Seaforth at 40, I mean, it was just an unbelievable design at a price point that like almost anyone could save up and buy. And the trouble was everyone wanted one. Everyone still kind of wants one. They're difficult to buy. So I understand it's like a headache when someone who has one talks about how great they are, but like they're that great.
Well, what do they go for on the secondary market now?
Like it depends on the dial, the complication. You know, there's some GMTs. Those are fairly expensive. In a weirder dial color, even more expensive.
Like that baby blue dial, time only. Like, that was kind of hot, right, that one?
Yeah, I think that one's like in the range of 2 to 3X.
Wow. Well,
good on I've been offered. I have a 12-hour pastel no date first series. And I mean, I've been offered in multiples of what it was originally worth.
I like that you're hanging on to it.
It's a dope one. Yeah. My favorite is I have a Roldorf LE, which is the model they designed in-house with a watch retailer in Vancouver in service location. So it's a DLC black case with a cream tuxedo dial, and the surround on the dial is metallic green, but it's really dark green. It's meant to like evoke like a Pacific Northwest sort of color scheme. And I adore it.
You wrote about that watch saying that it kind of captures the time in your life when you were living in Vancouver.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a token from that time, and it's something sweet that I love. So yeah. I don't think you can get a bad one. I've had a couple Tropics. I've had Delphins and Blue Rings and the rest of them. They've been around for a while, and I think they hit a stride with the Seaforth.
Sweet. I'm honestly kind of surprised it took you to the fourth round to pick one. But on the other hand, I don't think that was really a threat
strategy from
any of us. Yeah. So I was kind of waiting for that one.
There it is.
All right, John, last pick, round four. Then we go to the last round.
Okay. For my last pick in round four, I've been a fan of the System 51 ever since it came out. So I'm going to nab a System 51. I'm looking at what's currently available on the Swatch site. And I like this System Noit. I think it's reference number SUTN405, $150. I'll take that.
It's a pretty damn good watch for $150.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a System 51 since the year they became available to buy. At first, you had to go to Switzerland to get them. And I've always had one in my collection. And I frankly, the System 51s that I have, I have a few, I wear them. They're great. And then for my final watch,
with your remaining $400.
Yeah, I'm not going to even use close to that. I'm going to just grab a Casio G-Shock, 5600, which last time I checked on Amazon, I could pick up for $43.
All right.
Yeah. So those are my two flexes right there.
You're leaving money on the table. Literally.
Yeah, I'm going to buy some sushi with that.
All right.
I think I'm going to join you there, John. Sweet. So then we've got James.
So for my fifth and final pick of this draft, I'm going with a watch that I've worn so much over the last few years. I've owned five different versions of this watch, and it is the Garmin Fenix 6 Pro. In this case, it's the Pro S or the S. It's their new 42 millimeter format. I've been used to the 47 since the Fenix 3. And this now is a 42 millimeter and it's super wearable. It weighs nothing. The battery lasts forever. It definitely has more functionality than an Apple Watch. So I will contest who got the most complications.
Wow, okay.
A vastly more complicated GPS system.
Okay.
You know, tracks almost any sport. It's Ant Plus certified. So it'll connect up with your gym equipment wirelessly really easily. And then the secret is not only do you get all your normal smartwatch functionality and a really killer battery and a really nice overall design, but it also does all the backup for all the sports stuff. So every hike you've ever been on sits on a website. You can go back and look at the route. I've used it more than a couple times when I got lost. It has a track back feature, which works kind of like it sets your car or your start point as a route home, but it knows the meandering hiking route you took, and it'll buzz when you're more than a few steps off of a line. And it also gives you an ETA for when you're back. So if you're getting that text message or you're worried that you might, you know, break daylight or something like that, you can let some people know.
Nice.
It also integrates with like their entire InReach system. So if you're doing a beacon or satellite communication, the watch will operate notifications based on that. They do a ton. They're a really, really killer, compelling product, and I love mine.
Two smartwatches. Love it.
Okay.
All right, for my last pick, I am going to go in the same vein John went in. I'm going to go for a Swatch, but I'm going to go for the Skin Classic.
You have one of those now.
I do. I took it because I bought one because my buddy Jeff, who now works here, and my buddy Nick, who also now works here, have both worn them for years, and I always thought they were great. And actually, the night that H10 ended, when we did our Hodinkee 10-year celebration, on my walk to the subway, I walked by the Swatch store, and I said, "You know what? I'm gonna go buy a watch. We're gonna mark H10." So I bought a Swatch Skin, but I just think it's for $125. It comes on a mesh bracelet. I joke that it's my like anti-watch. It's the watch I wear when I want an antidote from watches, whether I've been at a trade show or on a press junket or just like obsessing over a like really deep dive story and I need to like clear my head. To me, it's like as little watch as you can wear while still wearing a watch. And I love it. So to help me sneak in under the budget there, but I think I've actually got a little bit of money left. I think I've got, almost $1,000 left, Gray?
What's your price on the Swatch Skin?
It's $125.
Sir, you were on 900 something
bucks. All right. John, I'm joining you for sushi. We're going somewhere nice.
Let's do it. Oh, that's a all real right. Nice sushi.
Yeah, you can't come. You spent too much money, Cole.
Well,
we're going. Let's go, right. Do we have enough for sushi, Nas?
Yeah, we do.
I got nine bills floating.
Yeah? Sorry, Cole. We're going to sushi, Nas. Well, you're out.
Burning a hole.
I've
hot
only
to touch.
Picked four watches.
All right. You better come in under.
I will for sure.
All right. Guys, we going to dinner after this?
Actually, no, I won't. I won't go to the throw-in.
So we're going to dinner without Cole.
That's fine. You know why? Because I will be sitting back, crossing my arms with a fat rolly on my wrist, baby.
Boom. All right, Cole, last pick of the draft. What are you picking?
Last pick of the draft is a Rolex Air King. I have $2,200 left. Is that right, Gray?
Correct.
Yep. So that is correct. I do have $2,200 left. And if you don't believe me that you can get a sweet Rolex for $2,200, look up reference 5500 or 5504. Those you can get for $2,000 all day long.
All right, Cole, I'm going to stop you there.
Okay, fine.
Prices have gone up on these guys. You're looking north of $3,000 for one, but let's go to Nakazawa instead of Sushi Nas, and let's give Cole our extra money. Does that work?
Good with me.
Fine by me.
Guys, right. I owe you big time.
Yeah, you do.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
We'll pull the extra money.
think of us every time you wear your Rolex.
Yeah. I agree with you, though. That's an awesome choice.
Yeah, it's a good value, and also fits in with the aviation theme. You remember your 10 questions with Goldberger.
Yeah.
One of the things that he pointed to is a proper collection is thematic.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a little theme going here. So vote for me, Cole Pennington 2020.
Cole's campaigning. We give Cole our money to finish his thing, and now he's campaigning.
Vote for the candidate that overspent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
had to rely on
the, other people's
the,
money,
the cash surplus.
I am from once again more lucrative asking nations. Your financial okay. support.
I think Cole,
I came I think in under budget and ahead of time.
Yeah, I think you've got a career in politics, Cole. All right, so what we're going to do here is, in light of Cole's recent explanation of his of his collection here, you got to list your collection, the prices, your final budget, and then we're going to put 30 seconds on the clock, and you've got 30 seconds to kind of pitch the listeners and justify your collection, why you think this is the best $10,000 five-watch collection. Let's start with Cole. Let's go through it. All right. So you've let's go through your collection, and then you can give us the official spiel.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll go through it quickly. It started with a Paul Router.
Yep.
Then went on to a Flightmaster as a complicated watch. Then a Sin 556 as an everyday beater, and then as a flex watch, which also is in line with everyday beater, but it's a flex watch. It's Seiko 6105. And then this is the flex watch in the sense of like you're flexing on someone is the Rolly Air King. So that's my five watch collection. So I'll start my 30-second spiel right now. First, just saying vote for me. I can really do good for the watch community. And
I'm a good watch guy.
I consistently serve the community through scholarship. And okay, here's the short and skinny of it. This is a thematic collection. It addresses all needs in life with a dress watch, complicated and so forth. And also, any of these watches on their own are great watches.
There you go. All right, I'll run through mine. I've got a Tudor Black Bay 36 as my everyday beater. I've got a Cartier Santos Dumont in steel in the smaller size as my dress watch. I've got an Apple Watch Series 5 Edition in titanium in the 40 millimeter size for my complication. And then my two other watches is I have a Swatch Skin Classic on a mesh bracelet, and I've got a vintage Grand Seiko 56 GS with date in steel. My 30 seconds start now. All right, so here my approach to this was to approach this as a collection, not a set of five individual watches. So I wanted to create a series of watches where you would wear each one, you'd enjoy each one. Each one offers something different and something unique. I didn't want to end up in a situation where if you bought these five watches, you'd have one watch you wore all the time and the other four kind of sit and languish. So I think you get some different approaches to watchmaking. I think you get different things you could wear, and I think you'd have a lot of fun. James, you're up.
Okay, so I have a Rolex Explorer 14270, an Omega Seamaster DeVille, like a vintage dress watch. I have an Omega Seamaster Professional 2234 GMT. I have a Halios Seaforth, Universa, or Fairwind. You take your pick. And I have a Garmin Fenix 6 42 millimeter. I picked five watches that I really like. And I didn't really have... It turns out there wasn't that much overlap. Like, I didn't feel like I got cut out of anything I wanted. I think it kind of speaks for itself. There's a great everyday watch, an awesome travel watch, a couple decent divers, a watch you could wear while you're cutting the grass or cooking or whatever you want to do, working out, diving, etc. I mean, it's all the bases covered for a sport watch.
All right, John, close us out here.
All right. I have a Tudor Black Bay 58. I have an IWC caliber 89 gold dress watch. I have one of the great, you know, chronographs, vintage chronographs in the Minerva 1320. I have a super fun and modern, affordable Swatch System 51. And then I've got, you know, maybe the all-time best just kind of like throw it on, cut the grass, vacation watch in a Casio G-Shock. And I went for an affordable one, the 5600 at $43. Starting the clock. Okay, so I mean, I got something from the Rolex family very affordably that happens to look fantastic in the Black Bay 58. This is a watch that you just cannot go wrong with. I think, like one of the most undervalued watches still out there in the IWC Caliber 89. You can get one for less than $300, for less than $3,000, and this is a watch that you're going to wear all the time. I promise I do mine. You have a great vintage chronograph in the Minerva. And, you know, the System 51 in the G-Shock are hard to argue with, too.
All right. I think we got four strong collections here. I think there's some through lines. I think, you know, there's We're a little heavy on the like 60s, 70s sport watch vibe, whether that's actual vintage models or kind of contemporary takes. I think we each pick something a little bit funky, a little bit weird, which I'm into. I think any collection needs something that's a little strange, something that kind of expresses your own personality. But we want to know from everybody listening which of these collections you would pick. Unlike fantasy football, our teams can't play one another. Because
mine would win.
Yeah, because James's would win. Yeah, yeah. James's team would move the chains, is what would happen.
It's a game of offense.
I want to add one thing. That if you vote for my collection, I will make wait lists illegal. So stainless steel.
Campaigning.
Paul is still campaigning.
And woo. Instead of universal basic income, everyone gets a watch.
All right, guys. That's it for now. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We're going to gather the troops again. We'll reveal the winner. Gray is the only one who will have access to the results. So we will all find out together in the room at the same time on mic. And then we'll also do a little bit of a recap. We'll talk about kind of what watches were left on the table, whether there are watches that came to mind afterwards that we wish we'd included, and kind of rehash our collections a little bit. So yeah, I'll see you guys all back here, same place, maybe same time, maybe not, in about 2 weeks.
Vote for Cole 2020.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, guys. This week's episode was recorded at Hodinkee HQ in New York City and was produced and edited by Grayson Korhonen. Please remember to subscribe and rate the show. It really does make a difference for us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.